You never did love me, did you? You hate me, don't you? You're not my real parents. Sound familiar? These words can be triggering, and if they trigger you, I want you to know I see you. They're also very painful words, extremely painful words, and I feel your pain. The question was raised yesterday, is there hope? Is there hope? Yes. Absolutely. As long as there is life, there is hope. My wife and I were asked to give you a glimpse into our journey and share with you some of the things we found helpful. And I pray, trust and pray that what we have to share, you can apply to your journey and where you're at. And I trust that you can catch a glimmer of hope. Foster care is a journey. Adoption is a journey. And we're all at different places on that journey. Some may have just started. Maybe you have a tiny infant in your lap. Maybe you're still waiting on a child. Some of us have been in it for a few years, saw some behaviors that can come up. And some of us have been in for many years, and you know nothing surprising anymore. So we're all on a different part, different journey, different. Our journeys, we're all at different spots on that in that journey. And again, I trust that you can take something here and apply it to your where you're at on your journey. As Paul said, we're John and Roseanne Brubacher. We're from the Lancaster area here in Pennsylvania. I work as sales at Greenway Fence and Railing Supply in New Holland. We attend Calvary Mennonite Fellowship, Mid-Atlantic Fellowship Church, and this fall we'll be married 20 years. We have 5 children. 3 were adopted through foster care, and 2 biological children. Isaiah, he's 18. Malia is 17. Kiera is 14. Davian is 12. And Avalon is 9. And I'm not going to apologize necessarily for this, but you may see that we will become very emotional about our story because it's personal. It's very near and dear to our hearts. And so just bear with us as we go through this. There is a verse that we clung on to throughout our journey, and that's found in Philippians 1, verse 6. Being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it unto the day of Jesus Christ. We felt God leading us into foster care, and he began a work in us and also in our children as they came into our home. And sometimes we just need patience and allow God to perform his work. And he is. He is quietly working in the background, and sometimes we can't see it. But he's there. He's working. All of our adopted children have had to process trauma of some sort, some a little more than others. But today, we're going to focus on our one child and our recent challenges with Rad. I'm sure we're all familiar with Rad. I don't really need to go into that. But when we got him as foster care, through the foster care system, we noticed early on he was very busy. I mean, worse than our other children. Just into things. Can I say, most times it was those typical things you would see in a child, but this was over, this was in excess. You tell him to come here, he gets in your face. What did you say? He yells. You know, just things like that. We just notice things were raising questions in our mind. By age 4, we were looking for respite care just to give us a break. Because it was just over and above anything else. We were fortunate enough to find a counselor, one of the last counselors that we had. We were at numerous counselors and therapists and things like that. One of the last counselors we found was actually an adoptive dad. And we're like, he understood. He got it. He knew what we were going through. Finally, we have someone who can understand. Not that the others weren't of any help, but he really knew what we were facing and what we were dealing with. And he got to the point where he's like, I can't help him. And he advised us to look into boys camp. And I'm sure, again, you're familiar with that, whether it's Allegheny, Bald Eagle, there's Ohio. I don't know what all they are anymore. And so we started looking into that. Bald Eagle was, we knew some people, some families that were at, their son was at Bald Eagle. So we're like, we sort of got a little glimpse into that. So we're like, well, let's try there first. And they said, well, we don't take them before the age of 9. This was the summer when he turned 8 prior, like more than the spring. So this was summer after he turned 8. That looked like a long year. We were put on the waiting list. But again, we knew it was going to be really long. That year just looked like a dark hole. That's what it looked like to me. And we began feeling hopeless. Like, is this ever going to, is this opening ever going to come? Will these behaviors ever change? Things escalated. They got worse. The younger girls, they were scared of him. They started locking them when he'd go in a tantrum or whatever. They would run. They would lock themselves in their bedroom. They would turn music on. Their bedroom became their safe place. They would turn music on, or we often had stories on CD, audio stories that they could listen to, and they would turn it up loud so they would drown out the sound he was making downstairs. Just blatant disrespect, just over and over and over again. Then sometimes he would be better, and we're like, well, do we need camp? Like, he seemed like maybe this is a new leaf, maybe he turned over a new leaf, maybe he's getting it finally. No, that was short-lived. He tried self-harm a couple times. He started trying to harm others. And we'd have violent outbursts just by asking for a simple task. Could you pick that up off the floor? It's like you lit 40 sticks of dynamite. Just a simple task, just picking something up. Just something simple. Again, other things too that were just typical for his age, but in excess. It was exhausting. I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about. It's just exhausting. You know, sometimes it would just be like, I'm not even going to ask because I don't need 40 sticks of dynamite going off again. You just do it yourself, you know. But yeah, total exhaustion.
So about a month or so after we put him on the waiting list for at boys camp, some friends from church invited me to go along to a seminar in New York to listen to Ann Yoder, which I'm guessing a bunch of you know who she is by now, but at that time she was not a popular person, and I didn't know much about Rad. I thought I was just a terrible mom. I didn't know what was going on. So anyways, I went along with them, drove the whole way up to New York for the day just to listen to this lady talk and tell her story, and I'm like, what good is this going to do? But we'll see what she has to share. Well, that day, I felt very understood. As her mom spoke, Diane Yoder, she just really spoke to my heart, and I realized what we're experiencing and that this boy does need a lot more help than what we can actually give him in our own home. They did suggest Camp Attach for us at the point we were at. I think Camp Attach can be so helpful for so many people. I am not here at all to talk negatively of it. For us, we were not ready for that. We needed a break before we could even consider attachment. Our other children were so exhausted, and we really wanted to take care of our other children as well. So at that point, we did not feel comfortable with that, and we definitely were looking into boys camp. However, like John said, we had almost a whole year of waiting. And so in that time, we had Ann come in, and she sort of did a mini camp in our home. She did respite care for us, and she worked really much with our son, which was so helpful in giving us ideas of how to work with him and how to survive till we get to camp. She also was very good friends with his teacher that term, so she was able to give a lot of helpful tips to the teacher, and the teacher really worked well with us and with our son. And one other thing that she did mention, that Ann would have mentioned, is, I think it was from her, I should be careful that I say her name with this, but I was taught that, like, we asked, like, so we were taught some of Karen Purvis' teaching and some of Nancy Thomas. Some of you probably recognize those names. What's the difference? Like, why does some work for one? Like, Karen Purvis had great ideas, and some of her stuff worked really well for some of our children. She said this one professional would have taught us, if it's rad, you almost need more the Nancy Thomas style of teaching just because of the way it works with the children with extreme attachment disorders. So gave us a little bit of an idea why some of the things we were trying wasn't working, because it was not what this child needed that had a strong attachment disorder. So it was helpful for us to just have that tidbit of information. I'm sure each child is different, so everybody needs a little bit of different parenting, but that just gave us a great idea to start with.
So if you're all familiar with Boys Camp, it is something that a family worker would come to our house, and he presented to our son camp. And he had a binder there showing pictures, this is what we do, showing the fun things of camp. And the way they operate it is the boy has to say yes or no. And there's no going back. So the moment you say yes, it's over. You're going, not necessarily that day, but you're going. And our family enjoys camping, things like that. And so when he saw this, his immediate answer was, yes, I'll go. Because this was things he enjoyed. He loved building fires. And sometimes the fires were big. But they were... We had a spot for that, so it was all okay, you know. But he would have piled the wood up, you know. Like I said, everything he did was in excess, right? You know, so, you know, we can't have a little campfire. It has to be a big campfire. And so he had consented to go. And we're like, finally, good. So we were a little afraid that he might say no, and then we're like, now what? But we were praying, and he consented to go. So he moved to camp July of 2022. When it came down to it, we cried. This is our son. The average stay for a boy at boys camp is a year and a half to 2 years. I could hardly handle the thought of my son being gone for that long. Oh, we knew, we were told there'd be home visits every 6 weeks, I think is what it was. There'd be home visits, there'd be evaluations where you would come up to camp. We knew we would see him. But 2 years, even a year and a half, that's a long time. Just that struggle. And another thing is, these folks at camp to us were complete strangers. Oh, we knew they were Mennonite or of some sort. We knew they were Christians. We knew success stories from camp, but to us, it's complete strangers. To put my son in the hands of a complete stranger. That struggle within ourselves. We knew success stories from camp. We knew other boys who went through the program. We had friends from church just praying for us. And I will admit, we had a very good support group around us. And I trust and pray that's one thing you folks have as well, is a good support group behind you. They were praying for us. And one day at church, one of our friends gave us a little card. It had a little note inside that they're praying for us as we make this adjustment. And then the other note she put in that car just stuck with me, and it really hit me. And I kept it in my Bible the whole time my son was at camp as a reminder of when I had opened my Bible. I had it on an index card, so that way when you open your Bible, it naturally sort of went to that spot. And it was, so I would see it often. And this is what it read. For 30 years, the Father's house, meaning God, the Father's house was vacant of his beloved Son. He knows, like no one else can, how difficult it is to voluntarily choose separation for the hope and a plan of a greater purpose. And that just hit me right between the eyes. It just stuck with me. That, you know, this is not in vain that we're sending him off, because we know this is part of a plan and a greater purpose. And to think that God voluntarily chose separation from his son to send him down to this earth to die for wretched sinners like us. All the while, he's at camp. At first, I guess you could say, the first few months, it was, they call it the honeymoon stage. He was the most charming, perfect little boy you could ever see at camp. You all know what I'm talking about. I mean, he made friends with everyone. He loved all the chiefs. He loved all the cooks in the kitchen. Everyone's like, why is this boy at camp? But they knew. They knew. And when we heard those things, so we had different communication with our family worker. He'd often report to us things that are going on there at camp. And he said, we know better, but he said, your boy doesn't need camp. We don't see anything. He's great. Yeah, I can imagine. All the while, this mixed bag of emotions within us.
So after he left our home, I went through a period of deep grief. It was just really hard to have my 9-year-old son not with us, not with our family. I'd see his class at school, and I knew it was missing a boy. Going along on family vacations or something, I knew some of them were ones he really enjoyed, but he wasn't with. I saw his cousins, when we were at the cabin, I saw his cousins sitting there without him. They were bored because they didn't have their playmate. And that was really hard for me to watch. And some people thought we'd be relieved that he's at camp, which, yes, we were relieved, but there was a deep thing of grief with us. It was almost like a funeral, and yet he was still living. We knew he was there, up there, but he was not part of our family at that time. I mean, he was still a part of our family, but he was not with us. And it definitely was a very hard time for us.
One thing I wanted to mention about the cabin that she mentioned, my wife's family goes to a cabin, and can I say it's a boys' cabin? There's this stagnant, dirty pond with the largest frogs I've seen. Frog legs were often around our cabin, dead frogs around this cabin. Snapping turtles, I mean, a decent-sized snapping turtle that even... They had a shotgun there, even that couldn't even kill it. Not with one shot, at least. Snapping turtles, snakes. I saw one boy, heard the commotion the other, was that yesterday? This was a boy's cabin. And to see the cousins, sort of bored because our son wasn't there. In the meantime, as she was feeling all this grief, And I guess she dealt with some of this too, I almost felt guilty. Life seemed so much better without him there. We could go away. We could make a snap decision. We're going to go wherever tonight. Those of you familiar with the Lancaster area, our children love Green Dragon. We could say, let's go to Green Dragon for supper. And we could pack up and go. I could, on spur of the moment, take the children out for ice cream. We could stay, if we've got invited to friends, we could stay long. We could enjoy the visit instead of being on that high alert, what's he doing? We could enjoy the visit. After church, sometimes we had fellowship meals after church, same way. We could enjoy the time with people. We didn't have to be, where is he at, what's he doing? And then the thought really hit me one day is, do we really miss him? Didn't really seem like with him gone, we could do all these things. Do I really miss him?
During this time, though, while he was at camp, was a real time of healing for our other children. The older children were able to relax more. Their things weren't broken or stolen so much. And they also had more of my time. I could listen to what they needed from us. Our one daughter had extreme anxiety, and she had a lot of food intolerances. She couldn't handle much, and we weren't sure what all was going on in her body, but most of them left soon after our son was at camp. Like, it just really relaxed her body. And our daughter that often went into freeze mode was finally able to work through some of her feelings and is much better today. She was able to talk things out through all that time. But then a few months before his graduation, our son's graduation from camp, they realized, they saw the change in him, and they were really missing him. It was so bad that on home visits, they were like fighting whose turn it was to get to be with him because they were so excited to have their brother much healthier, and they loved to spend time with him. So it was so beautiful to see how exhausted they were with him, to how much they missed him and how much they were ready to spend time with him. It showed a lot of healing in their lives.
So backing up a little bit, going back to the camp. His actions eventually showed up. And the term they use at camp is he came to camp. They saw what we were talking about. But at the same time, as he was there for those, I think it was about 2 years, there were things he learned. He learned to make goals. He didn't always work hard at them, but he made goals for himself. Every quarter, I think it was, we had an evaluation, and there they changed goals for the next quarter. And we reviewed them. How did you do? At camp, it's constantly evaluating your day, you, things like that. And so he recognized his weaknesses. He recognized where it needs improvement. Again, sometimes, you know, as 9-10-year-old boy, he's didn't work him as hard as he should have. We're all that way, aren't we? But he graduated from camp in June of 2024 and moved back home. And Yeah, some of the things he learned there at camp was problem solving. When you have an issue, let's talk about it. How can we solve this and prevent it from happening again? You evaluated your day. How did it go? You evaluated your feelings. Why am I feeling this way? Why did I get angry when you said that or you did that? Why? You know, just those things. I mentioned this to someone last night, I believe it was. Us men will know what this means. His toolbox was full. It's up to him if he's going to open the drawer and use it. So he had all the things he needed to prosper, I guess you could say. One thing the camp suggested is have a mentor for him after he comes back. Someone other than the parents to keep him in line. Just things like that. We meet on a regular basis. We created like a little phone chat type of thing where we could chat the mentor and just say this is what he's struggling with these last couple weeks or whatever, and then he would work with that. We get asked different times, is camp good for Rad? Yes, it can be. The strict structure they have at the boys' camp like that is what they need. Things happen the same time every day. They learn how to work through disappointments. You know, sometimes something happens there at camp and you can't do what was planned, and how to work through that. They learn respect very quickly because there's authority over them. They learn how to respect that authority. Is he perfect? No. Never will be. We will never be perfect this side of heaven. But let me tell you, he's a whole lot better than what he was prior to camp. There's some things that still need improvement. Impulse. There's a lot of things, impulse control. You know, he still needs improvement there. Just before we came up here this weekend, there was probably the worst meltdown we had since he was home from camp. Things happen. But he eventually comes around. Mentioned rocking last night, things like that. He eventually comes around, recognizes what he did. Sometimes we have to send him to his room or somewhere where it's quiet. And he thinks about some of those things. And then he comes back, apologizes for his actions, what he said, and we're good to go. Somewhat. But yeah, he makes up for some of those things that he did. So also on our healing journey while he was at camp, one thing that happened was our marriage suffered. And it was like our marriage was on the back burner. It's like we lived in the same house, and yet, you know, almost seemed like she was my maid. She packed my lunch, she did the laundry. But it's like you come and go, you don't really get down to those talks that we really need to do. Our marriage was only surviving. You know what it's like, you know, survival mode. We weren't able to sit down to hardly discuss anything because there was something always coming up. It was hard to that those emotional connections. But that was hard on both of us because some years prior to that, we spent some time, a week of intense counseling to heal some of the hurts from my past that were harming our marriage. And we felt our marriage was back on track, and then this happens. Another thing derailing. And there's one thing I want to mention. If you're struggling with things from your past, hurts, whatever, emotional, you know, things from your past, you need to find healing from those hurts before you can help your child heal. I can't emphasize that enough, because remember, I'm sure you heard this, hurt people hurt people. And if you're not healed from your hurts, and that's sort of what was a struggle in our family, is I was hurt from my past. I didn't heal with him, and I continued hurting him. And so, again, I can't emphasize that enough. To find help, and as was mentioned, I think yesterday even, of sometimes it takes professional help. Don't be afraid to seek professional help.
So we were talking about how we were living pretty much in survival mode, and I do feel there is a time and a place for survival mode. You cannot avoid that sometimes with where your journey takes you. However, you don't want to stay in survival mode all the time. That is something that you definitely, it is not healthy for you, and you do need to find some healing. Just to sort of give you a little bit of a glimpse of my life of, from surviving to thriving, one of my good friends that we went to church with was watching me through the whole years of our journey. And she gave me a letter here that I'm going to read just to sort of explain, and some of you will probably really feel it in your own lives. I watched the light in your face slowly fade until you were only a shadow of the Roseanne I first knew. Until at the very end, which was a very low time in Davian's life, every Sunday your face was stamped with a silent grief, anguish, brokenness, and exhaustion. After Davian left for camp, it was a slow change, like the coming of dawn in the wee hours of the night, a softening of your face from the deep furrows that once spoke of inner anguish. And slowly, the light began to dawn upon your countenance again. The sun was rising again after the horror of darkness. Yes, there was the 6-week joy and grief of saying hello and goodbye, the visits, which were every 6 weeks, and wondering what the future held if change didn't take place. And I watched those little waves come and go, of which life always has, waves. But over your ocean of life, on top of your waves, the sun was shining again from your countenance. You're an overcomer. Revelation says that they overcame by the power of the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and because they loved not their lives until death. Praise God for the blood of the Lamb by which we overcame our sins, brokenness, and deviations, the ones we commit and those committed against us. A blessing to all you parents who love not your own lives and have laid them down to care for precious hurting children. So, few steps to take if you are in survival mode and want to get to thriving. This is some of the things I've found, some of the things I've heard from others. Is number one is to admit that you're in survival mode. Like I said, it's totally understandable if you're there. It's just not a good place to stay for long term. One thing is to reach out for help. Maybe it's a mentor, a friend, a good friend that's willing to listen a lot, or maybe you need to go for professional counseling. We need to see what's best for your own life. Another thing is to fast and pray. God is the number one healer in our lives, and we found that during a time of fasting, which is so hard for us to do, but it's asked of us in the Bible, and we have found some really deep changes in our son and in our own lives when we fast and pray. Another thing is to find ways to rejuvenate yourself. I pretty much lost all my hobbies during the time of survival mode. I really didn't care about, I didn't have much things that really I enjoyed. I have now found some things. I mean, I always love coffee chats with friends, so if anybody wants to go out for a coffee, that's totally my thing. I love doing that. I also, because all my children are in school, I was able to get a part-time job helping in a catering business, and I just love making food with other people and catering events. That's something that I have really been enjoying this past year, just finding a way to do something different. It obviously isn't going to work if you have a row of little children. It wouldn't have worked in our lives at one time. Another thing is to take a walk, especially if it's out in nature. That can be so healing, spending time with God. And if you're feeling discouraged, you can also do something for someone else. Getting your mind off yourself and focusing on someone else's pain can be a good thing. Just don't ignore your needs, but don't allow yourself to just wallow in self-pity. I was also told by, I think it was by a professional, that the best therapeutic parent doesn't mean that your child is going to heal totally. You can be the best therapeutic parent there is out there. That still doesn't mean your child's going to come around and be a totally healthy child. The child still needs to accept you as their parent and work on healing themselves. So don't burn yourself out just because you're trying to heal your child. Keep your marriage and your life with God number one in your life. During the one Sunday school lesson recently, I received an encouragement from an older woman. She said, you know, without hard things in our lives, we would be weak people. And I know I definitely would be a weak person without some of the hard we've faced in our lives.
As she was going over the letter her friend wrote her, I myself saw that in her, and I couldn't have put it in any better words. But again, as the husband, I really didn't know what to do. I did not know how to bring my wife out of that grief, that pain, and because I myself had my own set of struggles, and but at the same time, as it said, you know, how the light finally dawned in her face, I saw that, and it was such a blessing to see. So that was sort of, can I say, a very quick overview. I shouldn't say quick, but an overview of our journey that we faced. And there's some things that we've done and we've learned. And I'm not saying you do these things, it's going to help you out. So I'll give them, and you take them, apply them to your journey, and how this all works for you. But at our place, we call it our quiet nook. It's a place, a little sitting area, that we can sit there. We planted shrubs and flowers that were gifted to us as we were going through our tough times. And it's an area where our children know that they may not interrupt, well, unless there's some emergency, but that is our spot. When we're there, there's no interruptions. A good place for quiet time, place to read a book, pray, or sometimes have a date when you can't leave the property. The children might be in bed or whatever. It was just a place where we could get to sort of a little bit away from the house, but close enough that we could hear a little something if there's something bad going on. And this next one is for you dads. Dads, let's step up to the plate and let's help our wives. We cannot be passive fathers. We need to get on the same page with our wife. For in our situation, our son took his thing out on her, but he respected me. And so, do you see a problem with that? Yeah. I could tell him something and he would obey. She would say the same thing, uh-uh. So, get on the same page as your wife, men. You fight this fight together, not as another party in the war, so to speak. Don't tell her to get over it, because you can't, you won't. When your child comes to you, and this was a thing we often saw, and again, I'm preaching to the choir, so to speak, you know this, is they come to me, well, Mom said I can do this. Well, let me check with Mom first. Well, she said I can. Well, let me check. I always would check with her. Is this what you said? You know, because they have a way of triangulating, manipulating. And again, men, let's take care of your marriage. Don't let Satan drive a wedge into your marriage, or even your child drive that wedge, for that matter. Go on short dates or little vacations. I know some of you, it may not always be possible with young children. But sometimes we would do this. We'd put them to bed early, and we'd go to that quiet place and just be able to talk. Just get on the same page, because you need that break. You need that break from the child. Mark 6, verse 31 was another one that really fascinated me. And he said, meaning Jesus, said unto them, come ye yourselves apart into a desert place and rest a while. For there were many coming and going, and they had no leisure so much as to eat. Now, if you look closer in that passage, this came right after John the Baptist was beheaded. And and all that happening. And the verses prior to that, right after it talks about how his head was brought on the charger, we know that story. It says, and his disciples heard of it, and they came, and the apostles gathered themselves together unto Jesus and told him all the things, both what they have done and what they had taught. And that's when Jesus said to come apart. So this happened right after a hard time. Someone was killed. And Jesus said to come apart to a desert place and rest a while. There was so much going, they couldn't even eat. There was a lot of verses that meant a lot to us, and we don't have time to go into all of them. But as we were going through this, and it's amazing too, sometimes there was verses that would really speak to me, and there'd be songs that we would listen to that really meant a lot to me. The one we heard as we were driving up here, we were listening to some music a little bit, and one song really stuck out to me. When I heard it, I had to pull off the road, and I just cried. See if I can get the words together. I wasn't really planning to share this, but I feel it fits. It talks about, you know, the disciples out in the boat, and the storm came up on the sea. And the words of the song go something like this, where I've asked the Lord to calm the sea, but he didn't. But then in the chorus, it says, sometimes he calms the storm, sometimes he calms me. And that, like I said, I was headed to work one day, and this, I know not everyone has access to this, but I have Spotify on my phone, and you can select sort of your genre that you like to listen to, and all these songs just randomly come up. And one day, that song came on right after, the night before was a big blow up. And that was, I don't think that was no coincidence. I think it was a God thing, because sometimes he calms the storm, sometimes he calms me. Hebrews 4, 15 and 16, for we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feelings of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. Jesus was 100% man and 100% God. He had feelings. He knew. Just look at the Garden of Gethsemane. He knew pain. He knew what that would feel like, that feels like. Ephesians 3:20. We often hear this as a benediction. Now unto him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that worketh in us. And I do want to say this, that God is able to do exceedingly abundantly all that we ask or think. And he can, he will. Sometimes it's not right now. And you may, that was a little struggle at first for me. But yes, he can do. Isaiah 43 verse 2. Again, this was one that really meant a lot to me. When thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee. And through the rivers, they shall not overflow thee. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee. And here, some time ago, a minister preached at our church, and he brought this out, and I actually never knew this verse was in the Bible, but it's in 1 Samuel 30, verse 6. This was King David. This was after they miserably lost a war. A lot of people died. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people were grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. So he was threatening, the people were threatening to stone him. And yet he found that time to encourage himself. Proverbs 12, verse 25, and I'm going to read this out in the Amplified. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down, but a good or encouraging word makes it glad. I spoke last night to someone, I don't remember who that was, you know who you are, about when we see things, when we see people going through hard times, even if it's a complete stranger, just sometimes one or two little words can encourage them. They're weighed down from their burden, whatever they're carrying, can encourage them. And remember that. That one, few encouraging words can really lighten a person's load.
As we close here, I just want to mention, if some of you may be wanting a little more training on RAD or attachment disorder of some sort, in Lancaster area, the last week of July, we're going to have Karen Portress, I don't know if I'm saying her name right, from Canada. She is going to be coming to Lancaster County to share for parents. It's a three-day seminar for parents, and there's also a two-day seminar for respite providers and a one-day for teachers. So if you'd like to help your teachers get educated or some respite providers, whatever you would like, contact me if you want the links. There's links to sign up for it. So just be in contact with me. Our email should be on the printout that you receive, that you can always email me if you'd like more info on that seminar. And in closing, one of my favorite verses is Luke 1:37, "For with God, nothing shall be impossible." You all have hard in your lives. I'm guessing you do. That's why you're here today. And as a little gift for each of you trauma moms and or those that are in the waiting, whatever phase you find yourself in, Rebecca and I have gotten together a small gift for each of you. So on your way out today, please stop by the table and receive a small gift on your way out.
So again, that is our journey that we've been through. How should I say, we're not, I don't feel we know everything, not near. We're still learning. And, some of the things through RAD and all that stuff, and we always will learn. And I just trust and pray that you can take something that we've shared today, apply it to your life, and hopefully it helps you along the way. May God bless.